Species.
Unite.
Ultimately, this is a dumping ground. The industry would, you know, is not going to be spending money on horses that are going to be killed for human consumption. So ultimately, in their last 6 months, you know, they suffer. They suffer terribly.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Novogratz. This is Species Unite. For the month of October, we are doing the Species Unite Vegan Challenge, and we think that you should do it with us. So go to our website, speciesunite.com, and sign up for it. It's fun, delicious, and really easy. For 30 days, you'll receive a small dose of plant-based magic in your inbox. And we also have some spectacular prizes from Era New York Luxury Footwear and from Miyamojo Luxury Vegan Handbags. If 30 days feels like it's too much for you, then just do the first 10. In the United States, we don't eat horse meat, and we no longer have horse slaughterhouses. Although we do send our horses to Mexico and Canada to be slaughtered, and then their meat is sent to Europe and Japan for consumption. None of this makes any sense for a horse-loving country. There's a bipartisan bill that has been reintroduced to Congress. It's called the SAFE Act. It stands for Save Americans Forgotten Equines Act. And if it passes, it would ban horse slaughter. Not only would it ban horse slaughter in the U.S., but it would also prohibit the exportation of our horses to other countries for slaughter. This conversation is with Geminu De Silva. Gem has been on the podcast before. This is his fourth appearance. I asked him to come on today because his organization, Trax Investigations, has been doing an investigation on what happens to these horses once they get to Canada.
Hello, Gil.
Hi, Beth. Lovely to be back and meeting you again.
Lovely to be in London with you on this beautiful fall day. It really is a beautiful fall day. So thank you. Thank you for being here. And thank you because I wanted to talk to you about a very specific investigation that you guys are working on and have been working on. But before we get there, for people who haven't heard your other episodes, which we have a few of now, and they should go back and listen, but in case they don't, will you just say a little bit about who you are and what you do?
My name is Geminu De Silva. I'm the executive director of Trax Investigations. Trax Investigations has been running for 18 years now, and we do undercover investigations for animal protection groups around the world. So Trax Investigations basically tries to illuminate the lives of animals that might not normally be seen. We work with animals that are used for food, fashion, entertainment, research, and animal experimentation.
You guys do big investigations, really long-term, sometimes shorter-term, into any trade that exploits animals, right?
Absolutely. So anything from all animal industries, from factory farming, live exports, to animal laboratories. We've done up to 290 investigations so far for 40 organizations in 58 countries. So we're quite a global organization.
Let's talk about this late. I don't know if this is the latest because you sometimes do multiple things at once, but this latest investigation about horses. Will you give us some of the background?
We've been interested in the horse issue, specifically on the export of horses from the US to abroad. We've been covering this issue for about 8 or 9 years now. So specifically, we're looking at horses which are exported from the US to be used for human consumption abroad.
Which I think a lot of Americans especially aren't aware that we export's a nice way of saying it, right? We export thousands and thousands of horses to Mexico and Canada to be slaughtered there because we don't have horse slaughterhouses anymore in the US. And we don't obviously eat horses in the US. And I don't think most Americans think anyone should be eating our horses, but they go to Mexico and they go to Canada and they get slaughtered there and then they get ship to Europe and Japan for consumption.
Horse slaughter was banned in the US, or a de facto ban, really, in 2009. It used to be a big industry. I mean, in the 1990s, there used to be about over 300,000 horses exported to Mexico and Canada and worldwide. It's incredibly diminishing numbers now because, you know, now we have 16,000 going to Mexico and 4,000 going to Canada, which is still far too many.
It's a lot of horses.
Yeah, it's a lot of horses. And these horses are, these are a variety of horses. They're ex-race horses, draft horses, you know, wild horses. So it's the whole range of horses go to be exported. So when you have these ex-race horses, draft horses, they're basically sold in auctions in the US. And you have these people which are called kill buyers. They're buying horses to be used for human consumption. And it's a crazy thing because the US has banned horse slaughter. So you're actually exporting a cruelty or exporting something that you won't allow in your own country, which I think is so crazy.
We're paying somebody else to torture and slaughter our animals.
Right? Absolutely. So you kind of think it's out of sight, out of mind, really. It's like, okay, so these horses are no use to us. So what shall we do with them? Well, we'll send them abroad and we'll end up on a human's plate somewhere.
So they start out wherever they weren't wanted, right? Whether they're draft horses or race horses or Mustangs. And they end up at these auctions. Will you talk about the auctions a little bit?
I mean, there's potential violations at the auctions where, you know, we've seen animals being grabbed and roughly treated within the auctions. Then they go to be transported. And I think that's often forgotten about in when you're talking about the food chain, it's the live transport of animals. They can go into journeys unto over 24 hours, up to 30 hours, you know, over 3,000 kilometres. And on unsuitable trucks, when you think of a horse transport normally, you'd think of one or two horses kept on a truck and, you know, and going short distances. The actual welfare conditions aren't bad because they're, you know, specific horse transporters. But often these trucks are like converted cattle trucks. You'll get 30, 40, 50 horses within one of these trucks. They're not suitable for horse transport because horses are, you know, when they look at the anatomy of horses, you know, they will fall over. And whilst I haven't documented the journey from the US to Canada, I have done a number of investigations previously, perhaps over 20 years ago, looking at the horse exports throughout Europe. And the conditions are terrible because, you know, we've seen in those conditions, you know, horses have actually died because they've been trampled upon, they've fallen over, they can't get up, so they're crushed. And often you have no water, you know, no food during these journeys. So it can be quite horrific.
I think in the US, it's something like 24 hours is legal. It's legal to put a horse, 30 horses in a truck together for like 24 hours.
What we found from specifically doing investigations in Europe is nobody enforces these laws. You've got the paperwork that says you need to have specific rest times, but there's actually no one enforcing it. The reality is, you know, these journeys could go on longer. Bizarrely, yesterday, somebody got in touch with an old video that I made, production that I made on the horse transport in Europe, called 1,500 Miles to Die, and which was narrated, interestingly, by the leading racing correspondent from the UK, a guy called Sir Peter O'Sullivan. And that film documented the journey of these horses. And what we saw in that film was horses actually dying on these transports. And I'm sure this will be happening in transports from the US to Canada because they get trampled upon. You know, and what they call, and they get trampled upon, they're crowded, they get no feed, no water. And it's quite heart-wrenching. And at the end of it, they get yanked off, basically. You know, some of the loading and unloading of animals can be really stressful for animals, and they'll have slip off the gantries, slip off the walkways. And these aren't normal horse transporters. You know, these are generally converted cattle trucks. So they're not ideal vessels for transporting horses. They're not ideal vessels for transporting any animal, if I'm honest.
For the ones that go to Canada, they go to Bouvry, right?
Yeah, I mean, Bouvry is the main hub, for want of a better word, for where these horses will end up before they are killed.
And Bouverie's kind of old school Canadian family company.
They've been doing not just horse slaughter, you know, they slaughter a variety of animals. And, you know, they've been doing this for a long, long time. But again, the numbers have decreased. When we first started investigating this issue in 2014, you know, there was like 40,000 horses would go a year from the US to Canada to these plants. But now there's 4,000 horses which go to these plants every year. It's still far too many. Hopefully we can put pressure on the authorities to actually stop this once and for all.
Do you know why so many more go to Mexico than Canada?
I presume it's due to the locations, basically, because a lot of the kill buyer auctions are in Texas.
Ah,
so I would just imagine it's geographical location.
Tell us a little bit about Bouverie before we talk about what happens there. What does it look like?
It's in Alberta. It's in a prairie. So it's a very, very bleak surroundings. And you've got a series of pens, as it were, with horses in it, up to 4,000. These are vast pens and often overcrowded. And yeah.
This is like dirt and horses?
Well, there's no shelter. They're in the open air. These aren't grassy pens, you know. This isn't a pastoral idol type thing. You know, these are pens which have mud. You know, we've been in there investigating when it's been frozen, when it's been muddy, when it's been dusty. The horses have no protection whatsoever from the elements. There's no shelter.
A few minutes ago, you said when the horses come from the US, they are at Bouverie for 6 months before they get slaughtered. Why is that?
Since 2016, the European Union, which is the majority of where this horse meat ends up, have put a ban on horse meat being directly exported because of drug residues. Because these are ultimately domestic horses and they would have had drugs. They would have had drugs during their life to, you know, for veterinary assistance, etc. And so the European Union has said, well, we don't really want horse meat tainted with drugs. So the theory is that, you know, after 6 months, most of these drug residues would have left the horses and then the meat would be fit for human consumption.
So they keep them for 6 months and they fatten them.
I mean, what's really tragic about this is they keep them for 6 months and there's no veterinary intervention whatsoever. We've seen horses which are ill and neglected and got obvious injuries, etc. But the veterinarians are powerless to intervene. So they can't give them anti-inflammatory drugs. They can't do anything to them because if they give them any drugs, they wouldn't be fit for human consumption. So it's real misery for the last 6 months of their lives. That's going to be the ultimate fate, is they're going to be slaughtered. But the 6 months before they're slaughtered, they're just waiting at death's door with ultimately, you know, no help whatsoever if they fall ill.
I watched the video, and a lot of the horses have laminitis. They're lame. They're super lame. And I couldn't figure out, obviously, because they don't get vet care, but it's also because they're just being fed and standing there in this lot. Is that part of it?
When we went there earlier this year, I mean, some of the pens were absolutely muddy. You know, I mean, were caked in mud. So literally, these horses would be just walking on 6 inches of mud, and they can't move, etc., or they have great difficulty moving. There's lots of welfare concerns within those horses. You know, some are limping, some have got these splayed legs which can't stand up, some are suffering from, you know, some are overweight, but also some are incredibly thin. Their needs are not met whatsoever at this plant.
You guys have been going to Bouverie for all these years. What's different about this past year's investigation and what came out in April?
Each time we go to Bouverie, we ultimately see much the same conditions. You know, each time we see sick and injured animals, that's the reality. On this occasion, we've seen dead animals, which we have seen before, and also decomposing animals, which shows that they don't actually clear, or nobody's actually doing anything about animals that are died, which to me is even more tragic because it just proves there's no individual care of the animals. We've seen a whole variety of concerns, you know, regarding these horses. Some will have these massive overgrown hooves, literally, we're talking massive overgrown hooves. They curl up and, you know, so they can't lie down, they can't stand up, you know, or get up comfortably.
There's no farrier, right? There's no one taking care of their hooves.
Ultimately, this is a dumping ground. The industry is not going to be spending money on horses that are going to be killed for human consumption. So ultimately, in their last 6 months, you know, they suffer terribly.
After the 6 months is up, is that the plant to the slaughter plant?
That's right. So they've got an associated slaughter plant and they go there. And one really interesting thing to say is, and at that time, they can't have these anti-inflammatory drugs, etc. And in theory, if a horse has ever had bute, which I think it's phenylbutazone,
which is like aspirin,
in the European Union says it shouldn't ever be used for human consumption. But the trouble is a self-certification scheme, which means the last horse owner is just going to say, oh, we haven't given it drugs, etc. There's no checks and controls, basically.
But pretty much any horse that had had an owner has had bute in its lifetime.
But in theory, that shouldn't be going to human consumption. But the reality is all these horses end up for human consumption.
They slaughter them there and then they ship them off.
They slaughter them at the slaughterhouse and then they ship them to Japan and to Europe, France, Germany, Italy and Switzerland. I mean, it's the business. It's gradually diminishing. I think last year it was worth $28 million.
It's interesting for whoever makes the $28 million, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's tiny.
Compared with most agribusiness, it's a drop in the ocean. So, you know, right. Yeah.
This year, though, and this investigation, you did this with whom?
We did this joint investigation with Animals Angels USA, which is an American organization doing a lot of investigations on the horse issue, and the Animal Welfare Foundation based in Germany. And we've done a number of investigations with the Animal Welfare Foundation. For example, last year we did one on the blood horses in Iceland, where we looked at the abuse of Icelandic horses for the pharmaceutical industry. I think we talked about this on a previous episode.
We did. And if you didn't hear it, you should, because it's horrifying.
But so we did this for AWF and Animals Angels. What's been really good about this investigation is that they've worked with some other partners to actually get the material out and actually lobby and make legal complaints regarding from what we've actually seen. So, for example, they worked with Animal Justice in Canada, who wrote a 6-page legal complaint from the footage, saying that it violated the Animal Protection Act and the Health of Animals Regulations Act for safe food for Canadians. Bit of a mouthful, but I think sometimes it's really important, because this is when, you know, if you write legal complaints, this is when action can actually happen and you can potentially get the plant closed down. And if the plant closes down, the exports stop.
Which is great.
So that legal complaint has only been filed a month ago, so it might take a bit of a different process. But they had, 6 pages identifying how they found violations of the Animal Protection Act. So it's quite serious. We've got a kind of a twofold process of this investigation. Well, probably threefold. So one, basically working for the Canadian authorities to try and get this plant stopped. And also the Canadian organisations are also working against the live export of horses, because horses also from here go to Japan as being live exported to Japan to be used in raw food.
Horses from Bouvry are being shipped live, like on planes?
Yes, planes. It's only a small number, but the Canadian industry have live exports to Japan for raw meat. So they're slaughtered then in Japan and had raw meat. I mean, it's a small number, but it does exist.
Why do they have to ship them live, though?
I don't know.
Just a little more torture.
I mean, each part of this is horrific.
Yeah.
We work with the Canadian organisations, and they've done the legal complaint, but mostly it's to do with the bouvry and the welfare conditions. So we're working with the German organisation to stop the ban of horse meat coming into Europe, basically. Because some countries, I mean, the European Union has banned the horse meat from Mexico. So there has been precedent success where they've seen welfare conditions or food standards conditions being violated. And they think, okay, well, there's a potential that we can ban this.
And even though these horses aren't on drugs, there's thousands of horses crammed together with dead horses, with horses like decomposing. Imagine the amount of disease that's floating around in there too that's being exported.
Ultimately, it's like a factory farm. You know, when you come to factory farming and, you know, that's a cesspool. Yeah, one would hope that the European Union would actually put a ban to it, because another great thing about these organisations that they worked with, the AWF and Animals Angels, is that they've worked with the coalition partners within Europe in individual countries. They work with organizations in France and Italy and Switzerland. And they put pressure on business because you don't always have to just lobby governments, because governments takes ages. But businesses sometimes can be more reactive to change, or retailers can be more reactive to change. Earlier this year, as a result of these investigations, a major French distributor has banned the horse meat from this plant. And they supply a lot of the supermarkets within France. We've also had similar success in Switzerland. The major retail company there has said they won't take Canadian horse meat from these plants. They're kind of working on two fronts, really, the legislative front and also just working with businesses, because sometimes you've got to try and use every possible approach. And, of course, I should always say, the public pressure. There's petitions, they're calling on the public to call for a ban on this horse meat.
And what about the USA?
We just did a small 2-week investigation, but it's got so many tentacles. So it's working in Canada, it's working in Europe. But potentially the most important impact is what it could have in the USA. To give a bit of backstory, and I know, Bethy, you've been working on this area for a long, long time, but it's looking at what's called the Save Americans Forgotten Equines Act. This was a bill introduced, I think it was last year, which is trying to get the ban of using horse exports for slaughter, or anything associated with horse exports for slaughter. And that's a bipartisan approach from, it's going through Senate. It might take some time, but I think it's a really vital and potentially groundbreaking bit of legislation which will actually put an end to this trade.
Honestly, I think the more people that do more on this, like write Congress people, write letters to the editor, write whatever you can write. And it's one of those things that's like, this is such a no-brainer. Of course, we should not be shipping our horses to other countries to torture them and then chop them up when we don't even need horse. So you would think, oh God, it's in there. It should pass. It could take 10 years unless people really jump on this and like fight for it. Because the more people fight for it, the faster things like this pass.
I know you've been a great champion, and rightly so, because this is an opportunity to contact your legislators and actually get them to act. Because, you really need to have that public pressure. How change happens is you put pressure on legislators, you put pressure on them, and then they will actually act. That's how investigations have worked, basically. It's to raise public awareness to get the politicians to act.
When change happens, for sure.
Yeah.
And it does. And you've witnessed so much change since the 80s when you first got into all this, right?
Absolutely. And sometimes, unfortunately, things do take time, but we're in it for the long run. So this legislation might take 10 years. But in the meantime, if there's enough pressure, hopefully, it will decrease by itself. We've seen, for example, we've done investigations. Classic example of a dying industry that we've done investigations is the fur industry in Europe, where we've gone to investigations in France and Belgium, where we visited a number of fur farms, and they've got fewer and fewer each time we've gone. And finally, the public outcry has become bigger and bigger each time we release an investigation. And finally, the legislators act, they put a ban. So that's what I'm hoping will happen with this.
Yeah. And it is a dying industry, but there's still 20,000 horses who are going through this every year. It might be dying like in the big picture, but not to them.
I think that's the important thing to say is, each of these horses, it's potential for suffering. They're suffering all along the line at the auction where they might be loaded or rounded up inappropriately, suffering on the long distance of the transport, and then suffering, 6 months suffering at the bovary plant before they're slaughtered. And we haven't even got to the stage of the slaughtering. We haven't tried to film at the slaughterhouse.
I read in some of the stuff you sent me, like a lot of the things that are going on during the horse slaughter, like horses that are shot 5-6 times and not killed.
That documentation's from the official Canadian authorities. It's not animal activists that are saying these are the Food Standards Agency in Canada that are saying that, the inspection agencies that are saying that. That's not rumor. that's fact.
Right. So even the death is drawn out and torturous.
It could be. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Ugh. So tell me why this year feels so different.
I think you have to be optimistic. In our line of work, you have to be optimistic because you can see a shift in movement. You can see people are becoming more aware of the Safe Act, for example, certainly in the States. And in Europe, people are being more aware of the import of horses from Canada. It's getting public traction. It feels like the time has come. You know, I think there's a potential for the actual plant to close down. That would be my ideal scenario, is that this plant closes down, because when we went there this year, there was fewer horses there. So we actually witnessed, so when we were actually looking at it, you could actually say, this has completely changed from when we first came here 8 years ago. So change is happening. So we're just trying to make that a final push, really, to put an end to this trade, really, to put the final nail in that coffin of this trade.
Well, thank you for going. Thank you for doing these investigations, because no one would know what's happening there.
When we first started this investigations, it was quite open. But in 2019, the ag gag laws came. And what ag gag laws are, Alberta introduced, I think it was called Bill 27, intended to prevent the public learning about animal cruelty. So what they decided to do is, instead of focus on the industries which and the cruelty within the industries, was actually focus on people trying to get this story out. For example, they increased the fines for trespassing from 2,000 to 200,000, including potential jail time. They really want to keep it under wraps.
In the U.S., certain states have ag gag laws, and they're insane that we even have them. It's, of course, it's states that have a lot of factory farms have ag gag laws. And in the U.S., you'll go to jail if you're like on the across the street and you take a photo. They're crazy laws, which I'm sure is why you guys don't investigate in the U.S. very often, because you'll spend the rest of your life in prison. With Canada, you guys are really putting yourselves at risk then. Is that all animal agriculture in Alberta? Is that what the ag gag law covers?
We have to be creative to get around ag gag laws. Right. I won't go into all the specific details that we had to be creative in this project, but I can tell you an example when we did go to the States and we looked at the broiler industry in the States.
For people who don't know, what's a broiler industry?
So this is the chicken industry. So this is for chickens that are bred for meat. And we went to Georgia, which is called the chicken capital of the world because there's so many broiler farms. And we were asked by the client that we were working for at the time, Compassion in World Farming, that we couldn't trespass onto these farms to get the footage. You know, we basically had to be invited onto the farm to get the footage, whereas no one's really going to invite you onto a farm if you're going to say, I just want to expose what you're doing. So we decided to be, there's a couple of us that did it, to be investors, and we wanted to buy the farm. We got an estate agent to show us around, I think, five or six farms, and we were renting, you know, and we met the owners. And of course, when we were there, we said, well, we're just going to have a look inside the sheds, which was absolutely natural. You know, so we looked inside these sheds, which have 30,000 chickens within them. You know, these are incredible places, incredible places. And we were able to film openly, you know.
Wow.
Because we were invited onto the farm. So we have to have creative ways of getting around these laws. So, you know, we try to think we're not reckless, but we, you know, so investigations were, when I first started 35 years ago, was a simple hop over the fence type of job. It's no longer that, it's generally no longer that generally doesn't happen. You know, we have to do it in other ways.
Well, because everything's so locked up, right? And so hard to get to and so illegal.
When I first started 35 years ago doing these investigations, there really wasn't an animal rights movement that was doing investigations. So people weren't expecting you to do this type of work. They didn't lock the doors. Whereas now, generally they lock their doors, but you'd be surprised how many people don't lock their doors still. You know, thankfully for us, but you know, they will have CCTV cameras, and we have to have ways of counteracting that. For example, we have thermal image cameras, we have infrared things to see if a CCTV camera is active or not, because often, you know, you'll see a CCTV camera, but it won't be functional. We've kind of learned on the job, you know, over doing this for so many years, of how to access a place that if you need to trespass. But generally, we try and think of creative ways to not do that and actually get legal ways to get access to these facilities.
So much of your work in the past decades has resulted in laws changing or action. Can you tell when you're doing an investigation, hey, this is going to be successful or this is going to create change? Do you have a feeling? Do you know what I mean?
I think when an industry is potentially on its last legs, we can feel that this is going to have a great impact, you know. So we certainly had that about the fur farm industry because I got a feeling about this one too. It literally is a dying industry. The horses are dying, but the numbers are down. And I think if there's enough will and there's enough will from the politicians and enough public pressure happens, you know, we can push that to actually make it happen. So, yeah, sometimes I think we can, you know, you can anticipate change, but sometimes things come out of the blue. You know, we do investigations, it has a dramatic impact, or sometimes you do investigations and it doesn't have the impact that you wish. So, but with this one, I think it seems crazy because, you know, why should Mexico and Canada just be a dumping ground for something that's been banned in the US?
Yeah.
You know, so I think there is real potential for some action to happen. Well, I hope it has.
Yeah, it's weird to say, oh, it's always so fun to hang out with you because we always talk about really terrible things, but it's still really fun to hang out with you.
Well, thank you, Beth, for having me along to talk about this issue. And yeah, I'm sure, you know, we've done a number of other investigations this year, which I'd love to talk to you about in the near future.
All right, let's do it. Let's plan it. Thank you so much, Cam.
Thank you.
To learn more about the SAFE Act, to learn about GAM and TRAC's investigations, go to our website, speciesunite.com. We are on Facebook and Instagram at Species Unite. If you have a spare moment and could do us a favor, please subscribe, rate, and review. It really helps people find the show. If you would like to support the podcast, we would greatly appreciate it. Go to our website and click donate. I would like to thank everyone at Species Unite, including Gary Knutson, Caitlin Pierce, Amy Jones, Paul Healy, Santina Polke, Ayana Peoples, Olivia Deming, and Anna Kollner, who wrote and performed today's music. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day.